Imperial Rome was the home of stately senators, sweaty gladiators, miles of marble statuary, and tourists? Well, it's true. Rome had an unprecedented 2 centuries of peace and prosperity at the start of the Common Era. For the first time in history, Roman citizens had the means and the leisure to travel the empire's well-tended highways. Author Tony Perrottet followed the ancient tourist trail from Rome to Aswan. He's written about the experience in his new book, Route 66 AD, and he joins us now from New York. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Kova.
You're in New York right now, a city you've compared to ancient Rome. How are they similar?
First of all, in the sheer size and scale of the place, ancient Rome had 1.5 million inhabitants, which made it more than 10 times as large as classical Greece. It was by far the largest city that anyone had ever seen. So I often compare, make it as the New York of antiquity. They're like the bookends of Western urban history, so that all the images that we have from ancient Rome and the images of New York at its, you know, at its sort of imperial height, perhaps in 1945, they're very similar. In fact, you can go back and look at the writings of the ancient Romans, and they would talk about Rome in the same way that people would talk about New York. You can almost take quotes from one and apply them to the other. Romans were very neurotic and paranoid, and I think that sort of comes out a lot when you read about when they were traveling.
You're making me think of Woody Allen in ancient Rome, but can you tell me, what were Roman tourists really like? Who were they?
Well, they were from the very wealthy classes. So it's very they were aristocrats. They were born to incredible luxury and an incredible amount of leisure time. They never had to lift a finger for work. So they would sit around in banquets and they would read poetry and they would learn Homer by heart and they would discuss the great philosophical issues of the day. So they were often rather pedantic and very sort of obsessed with the minutiae of mythology and of Greek culture. So what would happen is that they would be growing up, learning about all these wonders within the empire, and for the first time in history, they had the actual leisure time and the means to go to these places, and so they were able to satisfy their curiosity to go and gaze upon these great sites of their own history, and then to come back to Rome and then boast about it afterwards.
Now, did women and kids join the fun?
We understand that they did. The records tend to focus more on the males. And in fact, it probably was, you know, men in their 20s and 30s that were the most common tourists. But we have, for example, in the Valley of the Kings, a centurion signs graffiti in one of the tombs for his wife and 2 children.
Okay, so what did these Roman tourists really want to see? What were the tourist traps of the ancient world?
Well, leaving from Rome, they would go down to, first stop was the Bay of Naples, which was the first great seaside resort of history. It was, you know, a wonderful and sort of rather decadent place where surf, sun, sand and sex were the staples, much as they are in any tourist place today. But then they would go over to Greece, which was far more edifying. It was like the old world to the Romans, much the same way as, say, Americans in the 19th century regarded England. The next stop would be over towards modern Turkey, which was Asia Minor then. The cities there were incredibly opulent, and there were marvellous health spas and wonderful works of art. In fact, many of the great Greek artists had actually gone over to Asia Minor. It was all Greek-speaking in those days. They would go up to Troy, which was probably the tourist site par excellence, because Homer was the ultimate text for ancient Romans, and they wanted to go and see where the Iliad had been set, where they could see the grave of Achilles, the tomb of Hector, and the local tour guides would show off, the stool that Helen of Troy had sat on, or the sword of Achilles, or all these sort of spurious relics to give people something to, you know, to look at, as well as letters that had supposedly been written by Trojan heroes and things like that. And the final stop was to sail down to Egypt, which was the most exotic land of the Roman Empire. It had always, since the time of Herodotus, had exerted this fascination.
Now, were there any destinations specifically created to draw tourists? I'm thinking of, other than the beach, something like an ancient sea world or something like that.
Yes, you know, one of the strange things is that where there is a demand, the locals will sort of respond. And if they went to Sparta, for example, the Spartans were famous for their military prowess, and this had sort of died out in the over the centuries. But the Romans loved it so much that many of the great traditions, the harsh militaristic traditions, were reinstated. So there would be special shows, and there would be the young boys of Sparta would have to run through the streets being thrashed by the adults, much as they had back in the classical age.
Now, how long, Tony, would these tours last? If you left Rome and ended up in Egypt, how long was the trip? And did you go back home afterward?
It would be somewhere between 2 and 5 years. We know that Germanicus, who was a prince and everything was sort of set up for him, it took around 2 years. And you would definitely go back to Rome because one of the purposes of travel was to come back with your souvenirs, with all this wonderful information, and to sort of wow your friends, provided nothing went wrong, that, you, for example, Germanicus actually got sick in Syria and died. But
that's
assuming nothing
went,
it is unfortunate. Oh, it is unfortunate. That really spoiled his trip, I think.
How did Roman tourists deal with the downside of traveling? You know, illness and horrible food and death?
As for illness and accidents and things like that, they consulted the omens relentlessly. They lived day to day in this sort of neurotic fit because they were trying to decipher these. Every stray occurrence in the world was considered some sort of message from the gods. As for the other stuff, ancient literature is a litany of complaints about hard mattresses and leaky roofs and surly staff and mosquito-filled rooms and some demented innkeepers.
Okay, what about souvenirs? Did people come home with a miniature sphinx or rude postcards or really bad plates or something like that?
Similar, because one thing that they particularly loved were these glass vials that have been found in archaeological digs around the Mediterranean, little glass vials that would be engraved with, say, the lighthouse of Alexandria. One of those has actually been found as far away as Afghanistan. Our understanding is that they also had portraits done on site. You would have a portrait done to be sent back to the folks at home, and there would be, say, the Parthenon in the background, showing that, you know, you partly that you had actually made it thus far, but also as a souvenir of the trip.
Tony Perrottet is the author of Route 66 AD on the Trail of Ancient Roman Tourists. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks a lot, Kova.
I'm Korva Coleman. Good evening from All Things Considered and NPR News.